We present Siobhan McKenna and Cyril Cusick in A Village Wooing, a commediatina for two voices by Bernard Shaw, produced by Seamus Brenner. A Village Wooing.
The lounge deck of the Empress of Patagonia, a pleasure ship. Two of the deck chairs are occupied by A, a literary-looking pale gentleman under 40, in green spectacles, a limp black beard, and a tropical suit of white silk, who is writing and does not wish to be disturbed. And Z, a young woman, presentable but not aristocratic, who is bored with her book. She is undressed for bathing, but is very modestly covered up with a not-too-flamboyant wrap.
Excuse me. Could you tell me the time?
11.
My watch makes it 10:30.
Clocks were put on 30 minutes last night. We're going east.
I always think it adds to the interest of a voyage, having to put on your watch.
I'm glad you're so easily interested.
The steward will be round with the soup in 30 minutes. I thought we should have to wait 1 hour.
I never take it. It interrupts my work.
Why do you work all the time? It's not what one comes on a pleasure cruise for, is it?
Work is my only pleasure.
Oh, that's not good sense, is it? It gives me the pip to see you always sitting there over your writing and never enjoying yourself, nor even taking a drop of soup. You should get up and have a game of deck quoits. You will feel ever so much better after it.
I feel perfectly well, thank you. And I loathe deck games, especially deck quoits. The slapping of those silly things on the deck destroys the quiet of the ship.
Oh, I see. That is why you select this end of the deck. I often wondered why.
Within the last fortnight, you've inspected the priceless antiquities of Naples, Athens, Egypt, and the Holy Land. Please, occupy your mind with them until the soup comes.
I never cared much for geography. Where are we now?
We are on the Red Sea.
But it's blue.
What did you expect it to be?
Well, I didn't know what color the sea might be in these parts. I always thought the Red Sea would be red.
Well, it isn't.
And isn't the Black Sea black?
It's precisely the colour of the sea at Margate.
Oh, I'm so glad you know Margate. There's no place like it in the season, is there?
I don't know. I've never been there.
Oh, you ought to go. You could write a book about it. I wonder why they call it the Red Sea.
Because their fathers did. Why do you call America America?
Well, because it is America. What else would you call it?
Oh, call it what you like, dear lady. I have 500 words to write before lunch. And I cannot do that if I talk to you.
Yes, it is awful to have to talk to people, isn't it? Oh, that reminds me. I've something really interesting to tell you. I believe the man in the cabin next man beats his wife.
I feel a little like him myself. Some women would provoke any men to beat them.
I will say this for him, that she always begins it.
No doubt.
I hate to nag her, don't you?
It's your privilege as a woman to have the last word. Please take it. And don't end all your remarks with a question.
You are funny.
Am I? I never felt less funny in my life.
I can't make you out at all. I'm rather good at making out people as a rule, but I can't make head or tail of you.
Well, I'm not here to be made out, and you're not here to make people out, but to revel in the enjoyments you've paid for. Deck tennis, deck quoits, shuffleboard, golf, squash rackets, the swimming pool, the gymnasium, they all invite you.
I'm no good at games. Besides, they're silly. I'd rather sit and talk.
Well, then, for heaven's sake, talk to somebody else. I've no time for talk. I have to work my passage.
What do you mean, work your passage? You're not a sailor.
No. I make a precarious living on board ship by writing the Marco Polo series of chatty guidebooks. Unless I complete 2,000 words a day, I'm bankrupt. I cannot complete them if you persist in talking to me.
Do you mean you're writing a book about this cruise?
Yes, I'm trying to. Under great difficulty.
Will I be in it?
You will.
How thrilling. I've never been put in a book before. You will read me what you've written about me, won't you?
When the book is published, you can read it to your heart's content.
But I should like you to get me right. After all, what do you know about me? I will tell you the whole of my life, if you like.
Great heavens, no. No, please, don't.
Oh, I don't care who knows it.
Evidently. You'd hardly offer to tell it to a perfect stranger if you cared. Or if it was of the smallest interest.
Oh, I'd never think of you as a stranger. Here we are on the same ship, aren't we? and most people will think my life quite a romance. Wouldn't you really like to hear it?
No, I tell you. When I want romances, I invent them for myself.
Oh, well, perhaps you wouldn't think it's very wonderful, but it was a regular treat for me. You may think, because I'm well-dressed and travelling deluxe and all that, that I'm an educated lady, but I'm not.
I never supposed for a moment that you were.
But how could you know? How did you find out?
Oh, I didn't find out. I knew.
Who told you?
Nobody told me.
Then how did you know?
How do I know that a parrot isn't a bird of paradise?
They're different.
Not precisely.
There you are, you see. But what would you take me for if you met me in a third-class carriage?
I shouldn't notice you.
I bet you would. I mayn't be a beauty, but when I get into a railway carriage, every man in it has a look at me.
Well, I'm not every man. Every man thinks that every woman that steps into a railway carriage may be the right woman, but she's always a disappointment.
Same with the women, isn't it? If you were a woman, you'd know.
I am a woman, and you're a man, with a slight difference that doesn't matter except on special occasions.
Oh, what a thing to say. I never could bring myself to believe that. I know, of course, the men have their weaknesses and their tempers, but all the same, there's something wonderful you can get from a man that you never could get from a woman. Don't you think so?
Inexperienced men think there's something wonderful you can get from a woman that you could never get from a man. Hence, many unhappy marriages.
Are you married?
Widower. Are you?
Oh, that's the first time you've asked me a question. We're getting on, aren't we?
No, I'm not getting on with my work.
You're an intellectual, aren't you?
What do you think you mean by an intellectual?
Only that you consider me no better than an idiot, and that you're a bad husband, most likely.
You're quite right, on both points.
I thought so.
And now, please, may I go on with my work?
Please yourself, I'm not hindering you.
Thank you.
What books would you recommend me to read to improve my mind?
Stuart!
Oh, you shouldn't trouble the steward now. He's busy getting the soup.
I want him to remove my chair to the very furthest extremity of this ship.
I always say it's fresher under the awning at the end. You don't mind if I move too, do you?
If you persecute me any more, I shall go overboard. Don't you see that I want to be left alone to work, and that your chatter is preventing me from working?
It is annoying to have somebody talking to you all the time when you don't want to. But it's just as bad when you want to talk and the other person won't, isn't it?
There are 300 or 400 persons on this ship. Cannot you find one of them with the same insatiable thirst for conversation as yourself?
Well, but we all have to make ourselves agreeable, haven't we?
Not at one another's expense. You're not making yourself agreeable to me at present. You're driving me mad.
My father used to say that men and women are always driving one another mad.
That sounds literary. Was your father a man of letters?
Yes, I should think he was. A postman.
A what?
A postman, a village postman.
Oh.
What is there funny in that?
I don't know. The postman's daughter hath ripe red lips, but an egg and a pound of cheese.
Well, I'm glad I've amused you, but I don't think it's very polite of you to laugh at my father.
Yes, you're right. I was rude. But a good laugh is worth £100 to me. I feel a different man. Forgive me. You see, you quoted a remark of your father's, almost an epigram, which suggested that he must have been a man of genius.
Well, so he was. He had a genius for walking.
For what?
For walking. When he was a child, he won a prize as the infant pedestrian. And would you believe it? My mother was that indoor-y that she grudged having to go out and do her marketing. After we had a telephone put in, she never went out at all.
Oh, that's strange. As she was never out and he was never in, the household should have been a quiet one. But that remark of his about men and women driving one another mad rather suggests the opposite.
So it was the opposite. She was always complaining of being lonely, and he was always at her to take more exercise. When they were not quarrelling about that, they were quarrelling about me. You see, they had great ambitions for me. She wanted me to be a parlour maid in a great house. He wanted me to be a telephone operator. He said there is no future for the great houses and a great future for telephones.
And you? Had you no ambition for yourself?
Oh, I wanted to be something romantic. Like an acrobat in a circus.
Oh. And what actually happened?
I became shop assistant and telephone operator in the village shop.
What do village shop assistants and telephone girls
do? Operators.
Oh, pardon. Mm. Operators. Do they earn enough to take cruises round the world in pleasure ships?
Not they. I won the first prize in a newspaper competition. My mother wanted me to save it. She said it would help me to get a thrifty husband. My father told me to blow it all in a lump while I had the chance. You will be poor all your life, he said. But now you have the chance of living at the rate of 5,000 a year for 4 months. Don't miss it, he said. See what it's like. Have your fling, he said, for they never can take that away from you once you've had it. His idea was a walking tour, spending the nights in the best hotels. But I chose the ship because it's more dressy and more people to look at. Besides, I can get all the walking I want round the deck. At the end of the cruise back, I go to the village shop without a penny.
Have they found out here that you're not a lady?
The Americans don't know the difference. They think my telephone talk is aristocratic. And the English won't speak to anyone anyhow. And lots of them are just like me.
Well, how do you like living at the rate of 5,000 a year? Is it worth it?
It is, while the novelty lasts. You see, when you're at home, you get tired of doing the same thing every day. The same places, the same faces, the same old round. When you get a holiday, you go off in a crowded, hot excursion train to the seaside and make yourself tired and miserable just because it's a change. And you do anything for a change. But here, it's change all the time. Until you begin to realize what it is to have a settled home and belong somewhere. I shan't be sorry to go home to the shop and the telephone. I get such a dreadful lost dog feeling sometimes. Other times it seems such a foolish waste of money, and I hate wasting money.
That's an extremely attractive point in your character. My wife used to waste my money. Stick to that and you'll get married in no time.
Oh, I've had plenty of offers. But you know, it's a terrible thing to be a poor man's wife when you've been accustomed to a clean, decent job. I've seen so many bright, jolly girls turn into dirty old drudges through getting married.
Now, don't be afraid of dirt. Mine's a clean job, but I often wish I had a dirty one to exercise me and keep me in health. Women are so set on clean collars they make their sons clerks, when they would be stronger and earn more money as navvies. I wish I was a navvy, instead of writing guidebooks.
Well, what's to prevent you?
Well, I'm not trained to manual work. Half an hour of it make me wish myself dead. And 5 minutes of my work would produce a strike among the navvies. I'm only a writing machine, just as a navvy is a digging machine.
I don't think the world is rightly arranged. Do you?
Oh, we must take the world as we find it. It's we that are not rightly arranged.
That's what I mean. Well, I suppose I mustn't interrupt your work.
Yes, you mean that the steward is coming round with the soup at last?
Well, it's 11:30, isn't it?
No, thank you. No soup.
Thanks very much.
In a village shop and post office on the Wiltshire Downs on a fine summer morning. The counter is for general shopping for most of its length, but one end is reserved and railed in for postal business. A couple of chairs are available for customers. The goods for sale include ginger beer in stone bottles, tablets of milk chocolate, glass jars of sweets containing inter alia sugared almonds, all on the counter. Cheese, butter, and Hovis bread handy to the scales, and in front of the counter, a sack of apples on the floor and some string bags hanging from the rafters.
39. Sorry, no such number. Whom do you want? Dr. Piles? 15. You are through.
A comes in. He is in hiking costume with stick and rucksack, but wears well-cut breeches instead of shorts. Seeing nobody to attend to him, he raps loudly on the counter with a stick. Zed emerges.
I want a packet of milk chocolate.
Thanks very much.
A couple of hard apples.
Thanks very much.
A quarter pound of cheddar cheese.
Thanks very much.
Listen, don't interrupt me. You can express your gratitude for the order when I've finished. A quarter pound of your best butter, small loaf of Hovis, and 2 penny worth of sugared almonds.
Anything else?
No, thank you.
Thanks very much.
You sell baskets?
We sell everything. Hadn't you better have a string bag? It's handier, and it packs away almost to nothing when it's empty.
What's a string bag? Would you show me one?
This is the cheapest. Or would you like a better quality with a zip fastening?
Certainly not. I should have the trouble of opening and shutting it, and the worry of wondering whether it would open or shut, with no compensatory advantage whatever.
That's just like you. You're not a bit changed.
Hmm? What do you mean? I've been in this shop for less than 2 minutes. Why should I have changed in that time?
Excuse me. I shouldn't have mentioned it. Will you take a string bag?
Yes.
Thanks very much. Shall I put the rest of the order into it?
Of course. What else do you suppose I'm buying it for? Have you any buttermilk?
Sorry, we don't stock it.
Any ginger beer?
Yes, we have a very good local brew.
Oh, shove a bottle into the string bag.
Thanks very much.
How many times a day do you say thanks very much?
Depends on the number of orders.
Well, don't say it to me again, if you don't mind. It gets on my nerve.
It used to get on mine at first, but I'm used to it.
Have you a guidebook to this village?
Sorry, there's a leaflet in the church written by the vicar. You're expected to put tuppence in the box for it. Excuse me, but the chocolates are tuppence, sixpence and a shilling. Which size would you run to?
It's a poor heart that never rejoices. I'll have a shilling, ma'am.
Thanks very much.
I don't.
Excuse me, I can't help it. I say it without thinking, same as if you touched the button.
Someone has touched the button.
What number, please? Whitehall, 1212. I will ring you. Whitehall, 1212. Yes.
That's a police call.
Well, you needn't point the information at me. I'm not the criminal.
Oh, it isn't a criminal. Somebody that's been broadcast on the wireless is lost. You know the sort of thing. Missing from his home since January the 1st. Last seen in a deck chair on the Empress of Patagonia talking to a female.
Hmm?
Suffering from loss of memory.
Oh, that's extraordinary.
Excuse me. You are through to Whitehall.
You've hit on an extraordinary coincidence. I wonder whether you'll believe me when I tell you that in January last, I was sitting on the deck of a ship named the Empress of Patagonia, and that I was talking to a female, or rather she was talking to me. Oh, how that woman did talk.
And are you suffering from loss of memory?
Certainly not. I never forget anything.
Oh, then it can't be you, can it?
There. Can it? That woman always finished up with can it, won't it, isn't it? So that you had to answer out of common politeness. Take care never to pick up that trick. Or you'll be murdered someday.
Some people are like that. It often goes with orange-coloured eyes. Did you notice the colour of her eyes?
No, I never notice things like that. I'm not a detective. It's people's characters that impress me. I can't tell you the colour of her hair or the shape of her nose. But I can tell you that she was a most fearful nuisance. How much does all that come to?
The string bag, sixpence. Chocolates, a shilling, 1 and 6. The ginger beer
is... Yes, you can spare me the details. Will 10 shillings cover it?
Oh, yes, of course. You shouldn't be so careless about money.
Well, cease preaching. Take it. Oh, take it and give me the change.
Let me see. 18 pence and 4 pence for the ginger beer is 1 and 10, isn't it?
Have I denied it?
Cheese, 3 pence, 2 and a penny. Butter, 6 pence, 2 and 7. Apples we sell by the pound. Hadn't you better have a pound?
Well, how many to the pound?
3.
Well, I can't eat more than 2 apples at a time. Charge me for a pound and eat the odd one yourself.
Oh, well, say 3 pence for 2. That's 2 and 10, isn't it?
I don't know.
Hovis, 2 halfpence. 3 shillings and 1/2.
Do you happen to have a halfpenny to save having to take 3 halfpenny and cotton?
I hate halfpennies. I always throw them away. No, stop. I have one. Here.
Thanks very much. 3, 4, 5, 7 and 6, 10. Thanks very much.
Don't you find it rather dull in this village shop saying thanks very much all day?
Well, no matter where you are, you're doing the same thing all day and every day, aren't you? The only way to get it off your mind is to live in the same place and stick at the same job. Then you never have to think about it. That's the way the people live here, and they live for ever so long. It is no age here. Grandfather will be 102 in August. That's because he's never had to worry about what he'll do or where he'll go. He just imagines and imagines. It's the only way to be happy and long-lived.
Yes, but if your imagination has only one shop in it, it must be pretty bare. Now, how do you like to live in a room with only one chair in it?
Well, if you've only one seat, what more do you want than one chair? Up at the castle, there's 36 chairs of one sort or another in the big drawing room. But Lady Flopping can't flop on more than one, can she?
May I suggest that you flop in that one while we talk?
Thanks very much.
I'm not interrupting your work, I hope. There's nothing so maddening as to be talked to when you want to work.
Talking is part of the work in a village shop.
Tell me, do you ever read?
I used to read travels and guidebooks. Mm-hmm. We used to stock the Marco Polo series. I was mad about travelling. I had daydreams about the glory that was Greece, The grandeur that was Rome and all that flapdoodle.
Flapdoodle?
Well, I suppose I shouldn't call it that. But it ended in my going to Rome and Athens. They were all right. But the old parts were half knocked down. And I couldn't see any glory or grandeur different to Cheltenham. I was glad to be home again. And I'd so wanted to meet the Marco Polo man and walk about within the ruins by moonlight and hear him go on about them.
The Marco Polo man, the milkman, the postman, the muffin man, the Marco Polo man. Some frustrated poet earning his crust by quoting scraps of verse to bring the call of the East to dreaming telephone girls.
Operators.
Operators don't dream. Girls, girls of the Golden West. Did that poor devil never bring you the call of the East?
I'd read about it in novels and seen it on the films. They were all about moony drunkards and sheiks and the sort of girls that go dotty about them. I went right round the world to see the reality. Pretty places, of course, but the heat and the mosquitoes and the smells. Travelling just destroyed the world for me as I imagined it. Give me this village all the time.
Had you no thrill when you stood somewhere where a poet had said, "Stop, for thy tread is on an empire's dust."
A guide, you mean? They take the poetry out of anything, and all the time you're thinking what you ought to give them. If you fancy empire's dust and all that sort of thing, you should meet our vicar and start him talking about our standing stones and the barrows and the downs and the mound. Every grain of our dust, he says, is full of history. Same everywhere, I expect.
Are you married?
No, why? Have you any intentions?
Don't be in a hurry. We've known each other less than 10 minutes.
How much better do you think you will know me when we have talked for 20 years?
That is profoundly true. Still, I must think it over.
Nobody would ever marry if they thought it over. You've got to take your chance, no matter how long you think.
You're in a hurry.
Well, I'm past the age at which girls marry here, though I'm the pick of this village. That's because I thought all my offers over. So I've made up my mind to take the next man that asks me, provided he's reasonably suitable.
Do I strike you as being reasonably suitable?
Well, I think I have the sort of common sense you need to keep you straight. And you, being a widower, know what to expect from a woman. An inexperienced man expects the earth.
How do you know I'm a widower?
You told me.
Did I? When did I tell you?
Never mind, you did. I've noticed you have a bad memory, but I have a very good one, so it won't matter.
Steady, steady, steady. I've not yet made myself liable to an action for breach of promise.
Don't be afraid, I'm not that sort. We don't consider it respectable here.
Should I get any money with you? Do you own the shop?
No. All the money I ever had, I blew on a trip round the world. But Mrs. Ward is getting too old for the business. She couldn't run it now without me. If you could afford to buy her an annuity, she'd sell it.
I don't know how much annuities cost.
You will find it in Whittaker's Almanac.
Now, this is rather upsetting. Somehow, I've always taken it for granted that when I married again, I'd marry a woman with money.
Oh, that wouldn't suit you at all. She wants to spend it going into society and travelling about.
Oh.
How could you bear that sort of life? You, that never spoke to anyone on the ship and wouldn't take any part in their games and dances. When it got about that you were the Marco Polo man, the man of all our dreams, as you might say, I made a bet that I'd get you to talk to me, and I'd all the trouble in the world to win it.
Do you mean to say that we've met before? That you were on that trip round the world?
Of course I do. But you never notice anything. You're always reading or writing. The world doesn't exist for you. You never looked at me, really. You're shy with strangers, aren't you?
I'm absolutely certain I never spoke to any woman on that ship. If I talk to women, they always want to marry me.
Well, there you are, you see. The moment I set eyes on you, I said to myself, now that's the sort of man that would suit me as a husband. I'd have said it even if you hadn't been the Marco Polo man.
Love at first sight, eh?
Oh, no. You know, if I fell in love with a man, I'd never marry him. He could make me so miserable. But there was something about you. I don't exactly know what. But it made me feel that I could do with you in the house. Oh. And then I could fall in love with anyone I liked without any fear of making a fool of myself. I suppose it was because you're one of the quiet sort and don't run after women.
Well, how do you know I don't run after women?
Well, if you want to know, it's because you didn't run after me. You mightn't believe it, but men do run after me.
Oh, why?
Oh, how do I know? They don't know themselves. But the lot of money they spend on things they don't want, merely to come in and have a look at me and a word with me, you wouldn't believe. It's worth at least £20 a year to the business.
Yes, I shouldn't call you a pretty woman.
Oh, I'm not pretty, or what you might call desirable, don't you think?
No, I don't think. May I explain? I'm a man of letters and a gentleman. I'm accustomed to associate with ladies. That means that I'm accustomed to speak under certain well-understood reserves, which act as a necessary protection to both parties. You're not a lady, you're a villager. But somebody has educated you, probably the church or the local authority, to a point at which you can impose on unobservant and unwary travellers. You've had finishing lessons on the telephone, which give you a distinguished articulation. You can say 359 instead of 359, but you've not acquired any of the reserves. You say what you think. You announce all the plans that well-bred women conceal. You play with your cards on the table instead of keeping them where a lady should keep them, up her sleeve.
Well, where's the harm?
Oh, there's no harm. It's quite the contrary. But I feel rushed.
What do you mean, rushed?
Rushed. Precipitated. Carried to lengths I had no intention of going to.
Well, gets you somewhere, doesn't it?
Ah, yes. But where?
Here. There's no mystery about it. Here, in a good business, in a village shop, in a quiet place. With me to keep it straight and look after you.
May I ask how much that expression, looking after me, includes? Now, let me be clear on the point. As a matter of fact, I possess a small property which I could sell for enough to purchase an annuity for old Mrs. Williams.
Ward.
I believe I have enough to purchase annuities for both Mrs. Ward and Mrs. Williams, as they are, presumably, both centenarians. But why on earth should I complicate the transaction by marrying you? I could pay you your present wages.
A salary?
Ah, I beg your pardon, salary. You will retain your present position as my shop girl.
A shop assistant?
I beg your pardon, shop assistant. You can then make your own matrimonial arrangements and leave me to make mine.
Oh, I'll make my own matrimonial arrangements all right enough. You may depend on that.
Excuse me. I added, and leave me to make mine. Can I depend on you for that also?
Well, we'll see.
No, you will not see.
Well, what?
I don't know what. I'll not commit myself. We'll see.
Just so, we'll see. It's a bargain, then.
No, it most certainly is not a bargain. When I entered this shop half an hour ago, I hadn't the faintest notion of buying a village shop or marrying a village maiden or any of these things you put into my head. Have you ever read the fable of the spider and the fly?
No, but I used to sing a song called The Honeysuckle and the Bee.
Good morning.
You're forgetting your things.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
No.
A is now the proprietor of the shop, with Zed as his hired assistant. The counter has been fitted with a desk at the opposite end of the post office section. At this, A sits writing. He wears pepper and salt trousers of country cut with an apron. He is in his shirt sleeves and looks every inch a shopkeeper. Zed comes in through the post office, very fresh and matutinal.
Morning, boss.
Good morning, slave.
I haven't begun slaving yet. You've been at it for half an hour. Whatever on earth are you working at so hard?
I'm making out my balance sheet.
Oh, you needn't do that. The accountant's clerk from Salisbury does all that when he makes out the income tax return. You're not expected to do figures in this village. Fancy old Mrs. Ward doing such a thing.
When I bought this shop for Mrs. Ward for an annuity, I found she was much cleverer at figures than I was. She should have been a moneylender.
She was. She lent a shilling for a penny a week.
That must have been between 400 and 500% per annum. Shylock would have blushed.
What's the good of it when you have to give credit at the shop and then lend the customers the money to pay you?
Mrs. Ward should have gone to Geneva. International finance would have come naturally to her.
That's too clever for me. Anyhow, you needn't worry over a balance sheet. The accountant will do all that for you.
This is not an accountant's balance sheet. It's a Robinson Crusoe balance sheet.
Whatever's that?
Well, Crusoe drew up a balance sheet of the advantages and disadvantages of being cast away on a desert island. I'm cast away in a village on the Wiltshire Downs. I'm drawing up a similar balance sheet. I propose to read it to you as far as I've got. You can remind me of anything I've forgotten.
Let's have it.
Well, I begin with the credit entries.
Things to your own credit, you mean?
No, to the credit of village shopkeeping as a way of life.
Oh, you are silly, boss.
That's a disrespectful remark. As such, it should not be made to a boss by his slave. The understanding on which I raised your salary when I engaged you as my assistant was that our relation should be completely conventional and businesslike on your side, however I might occasionally forget myself.
Very well. You can keep your balance sheet to yourself.
I will go on with the telephone.
You will do nothing of the sort. You'll do what I tell you to do. That's what I pay you for. Sit down. Now, listen. Item. I have sharpened my faculties and greatly improved in observation and mathematics.
Couldn't you put it into shorter words? What does it mean?
It means that formerly I always took what money was given me without condescending to count it or attempting to calculate it. I can now both calculate and count quite rapidly. Formerly I made no distinctions between grades of butter and eggs. To me an egg was an egg, butter was butter. I now make critical distinctions of the greatest subtlety and value them in terms of money. I'm forced to admit that the shopkeeper is enormously superior to the Marco Polo man. And that I've learned more in 3 months in this shop than I've learned in 3 years in Oxford.
I can't believe that about the learning. But see how your manners have improved.
My manners?
Yes. Why, on that ship you hadn't a word to throw to a dog. And if anyone came near you, you shrank up into yourself like a hedgehog, afraid that they didn't belong to your class and wanted to speak to you without an introduction. Now, it's a pleasure to hear you say, good morning, and what can I do for you today, Mrs. Burrell? Mm. And have you noticed the cauliflowers today, ma'am? Not a touch of frost on them. And sparrow grass, very good today, m'lady, if you would be wanting some.
I positively deny that I have ever in my life called asparagus sparrow grass to an educated customer. Of course, when people are too ignorant to know the names of what they eat, that's another matter.
Well, anyhow, your manners have improved, haven't they?
I don't know. I know that they're no longer disinterested and sincere.
No more than ever used to be. Never easy with anybody. Now you're hail fair well met, as you might say, with everybody.
The world has become a world of customers. Let me write that down. Manners will never be universally good until every person is every other person's customer.
You're not a real shopkeeper yet, boss. All you want is to find something clever to write.
Well, why not? Find enough clever things to say, and you're a prime minister. Write them down, and you're a Shakespeare.
Yes, but who wants to be a prime minister or a Shakespeare? You've got to make a living.
Well, am I not making a living? I'm no poorer than when I bought the shop.
But if the money goes as fast as it comes, you can't save anything.
Oh, I loathe saving. It turns human nature sour. Cast your bread upon the waters, and it will return to you after many days.
And how are you to live for the many days with nothing to eat?
I don't know. One does, somehow. Stop asking questions. Let's get on with the balance sheet.
I speak for your good.
The most offensive liberty one human being can possibly take with another. What business is it of yours?
If you won't think for yourself, somebody else must think for you. It's my business as much as yours.
Oh, indeed. And who does this shop belong to? I mean, to whom does this shop belong?
I get my living out of it, don't I? If it shuts up, what becomes of me?
Well, if it comes to that, what becomes of me? You can get another job. I very greatly doubt whether anyone would give me one. Can you not be content with the fact that the shop is making enough to support 2 people?
Ah, but suppose it had to support 3 people.
Well, I suppose it hasn't. It hasn't, that's all.
It's not all. If you marry a stranger, there will be 3. And what about the children?
Well, the remedy is simple. I shall not marry.
You don't know.
Neither do you.
Yes, I do. You've married once and you will marry twice. Somebody will snap you up. You're that sort of man.
If a woman snaps me up, she must take the consequences. She must assist in the shop and you'll get the sack.
Oh, you are tiresome. But you see my point at all events.
No. What point?
Well, that it's really cheaper to keep a wife than to pay an assistant. Let alone that you don't have to live a single life.
Ah, but you can get rid of an assistant if she doesn't suit. You can't get rid of a wife.
If people thought that way, they'd never get married.
Precisely.
In this life, you have to take chances.
I have taken them and escaped.
You won't escape here. We don't hold with bachelors here.
You can't do without a general shop here, nor a post office. And while I command both, I'm in an impregnable strategic position.
Well, I don't like to say it, but people are beginning to talk.
Beginning? Huh? When do they ever stop?
Oh, there's no use talking to you.
No, not the slightest.
Oh, well then, take a month's notice.
A month's notice?
Yes, a month's notice.
A month's notice because I refuse to marry some ridiculous village maiden or illiterate widow with whom I couldn't hold a moment's conversation.
Wives are not for conversation, that's for visitors. You've had plenty of conversation with me.
Well, leave yourself out of this conversation, please.
Oh, very well, a month's notice.
Don't say that again, it's utter nonsense. What are you to complain of? You're quite well off here. I purposely pay you £10 a year more than you could get anywhere else.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Why do you pay me £10 more than you can get another assistant for?
Heaven only knows.
I'll go this very day. I'll go this very minute. You can keep my month. You don't know when you're well off. You're selfish. I don't wonder your wife died. Did she die mad?
Well, as a matter of fact, she did. I'm one of those unlucky men who draw the blank chances in the lottery of marriage.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't. Indeed, I was only joking. I wouldn't have said it for the world if I'd known.
Oh, never mind. I know you didn't mean it. By the way, I made an inconsiderate remark which hurt you. I did not intend that. I should have told you seriously that I pay you £10 more than the market rate because I value your services in the shop and wish to offer you every inducement to stay here permanently.
£10 extra to stay all my life here as a single woman?
Not necessarily. You can get married if you wish.
Who to?
To whom? Anyone.
Anyone in the village is good enough for me, but nobody in the village is good enough for you, is that
it? No, don't lose your temper again.
I will if I like. And if you knew how near I was to putting a couple of extra words in, you'd perhaps realize that a woman wants something more in life than a job and a salary.
Oh, I know that perfectly well. There's one thing we're all out for when we're young.
Now, what is that, pray?
Trouble, adventure, hardship, care, disappointment, doubt, misery, danger and death.
Not to me, thank you. All I want is a husband. And the usual consequences.
Same thing. Marriage is the village form of all these adventures.
Oh, why don't you take a more cheerful view of life?
I've learned not to expect too much from life. That's the secret of real happiness. Because I'm always getting agreeable surprises instead of desolating disappointments.
Well, your second marriage may be an agreeable surprise, mayn't it?
What exactly do you mean by my second marriage? I've only been married once. I mean, I've been married only once.
Well, look here. Straight now. Is there any man in this village that would be suitable to me now that I've got used to you?
My dear, men are all alike.
You mean it will make no difference to me who I marry?
Very little, I'm afraid.
And women are all alike too, aren't they?
What are you getting at?
If it doesn't matter who anybody marries, then it doesn't matter who I marry, and it doesn't matter who you marry.
Whom? Not who?
Oh, speak English. You're not on the telephone now. What I mean is that if it doesn't matter to me, it doesn't matter to you either.
Ah, you admit then that it doesn't matter?
No, I don't. It's a lie.
Oh.
Don't own me. All men are not alike to me. There are men, and good, nice men, too, that I wouldn't let touch me. When I saw you on that ship, I said to myself, I could put up with him.
Oh, not at all. You told me just now that you said something quite different. I believe you really said something much more rapturous. Being rather a futile sort of person, I attract vigorous women like you.
When you looked at me out of the corner of your eye, you looked at all the women out of the corner of your eye in spite of your keeping yourself so much to yourself. Did you never say, I could put up with her?
No, I said, damn that woman. She won't stop talking to me and interrupting my work.
Well, I tell you, we were made for one another. It may be as plain to you as to me yet, but if it's plain to me, there must be something in it, for I'm never wrong when I see a thing quite plain. I don't believe you'd ever have bought this shop and given up being a gentleman if I hadn't been here.
Well, now you mention it, I believe that's true. You were one of the amenities of the estate.
Well, I might be one of the amenities of the estate of Holy Matrimony, mightn't I?
Take care. Take care. You may find what you're trying to do easier than you think. About 5% of the human race consists of positive, masterful, acquisitive people like you, obsessed with some passion which they must gratify at all hazards. The rest, let them have their own way because they've neither the strength nor the courage to resist. Or because the things the masterful ones want seem trifling beside the starry heavens and the destiny of man. I'm not one of the masterful ones. I'm not worth marrying. Any woman could marry me if she took the trouble enough.
That's just what I'm afraid of. If I let you out of my sight for a month, I might find you married to someone else at the end of it. But I'm taking no chances. I don't set up to be masterful. I don't like selfish, uppish, domineering people any more than you do. But I must and will have you, and that's all about
it. Yes, well, you already have me, as an employer. And you're independent of me, and you can leave me if you're not satisfied.
How can I be satisfied when I can't lay my hands on you? I work for you like a slave for a month on end, and I would have to work harder as your wife than I do now. But there come times when I want to get hold of you in my arms, every bit of you. And when I do, I'll give you something better to think about than the starry heavens, as you call them. You'll find that you've senses to gratify as well as fine things to say.
Senses? You don't know what you're talking about. Look around you. Here in this shop, I have everything that can gratify the senses. Apples, onions and acid drops, pepper and mustard, cozy comforters and hot water bottles. Through the window I delight my eyes with the old church and marketplace built in the days when beauty came naturally from the hands of the medieval craftsmen. My ears are filled with delightful sounds, from the cooing of doves and the humming of bees to the wireless echoes of Beethoven and Elgar. My nose can gloat over our sack of fresh lavender or our special sixpenny eau de cologne when the smell of rain on dry earth is denied me. My senses are saturated with satisfactions of all sorts. But when I'm full to the neck with onions and acid drops, when I'm so fed up with medieval architecture that I'd rather die than look at another cathedral, when all that I desire is rest from sensation, not more of it, what use will my senses be to me if the starry heavens still seem no more than a senseless avalanche of lumps of stone and wisps of gas, if the destiny of man holds out no higher hope to him than the final extinction and annihilation of so mischievous and miserable a creature?
We don't bother about all that in the village.
Ah, yes, you do. Our bestseller here is Oldmore's Almanac, and next to it comes Napoleon's Book of Fate. Old Mrs. Ward would never have sold the shop to me if she'd not become persuaded that the Day of Judgment is fixed for the 7th of August next.
I don't believe such nonsense. What's it all got to do with you and me?
You're inexperienced. You don't know. You're the dupe of thoughtless words like sensuality, sensuousness, and all the rest of the twaddle of the materialists. I'm not a materialist. I'm a poet. And I know that to be in your arms will not gratify my senses at all. As a matter of mere physical sensation, you'll find the bodily contacts to which you're looking forward neither convenient nor decorous.
Oh, don't talk like that. You mustn't let yourself think about it like that.
You must always let yourself think about everything. And you must think about everything as it is, not as it's talked about. Your second-hand gabble about gratifying my senses is only your virgin innocence. We shall get away, quite away from the world of sense. We shall light up for one another a lamp in the Holy of Holies in the Temple of Life, and the lamp will make its veil transparent. Aimless lumps of stone blundering through space will become stars singing in their spheres. Our dull, purposeless village existence will become one irresistible purpose and nothing else. An extraordinary delight and an intense love will seize us. It will last hardly longer than the lightning flash which turns the black night into infinite radiance. It will be dark again before you can clear the light out of your eyes. But you will have seen. And forever after, you'll think about what you've seen and not gabble catchwords invented by the wasted virgins that walk in darkness. It's to give ourselves this magic moment that we feel that we must and shall hold one another in our arms. And when the moment comes, the world of the senses will vanish. And for us, there will be nothing ridiculous, nothing uncomfortable, nothing unclean. Nothing but pure paradise.
Well, I'm glad you take a nice view of it. For now I come to think of it, I never could bear to be nothing more to a man than a lollipop. But you mustn't expect too much.
I shall expect more than you have ever dreamt of giving, in spite of the boundless audacity of women. What great men would ever have been married if the female nobodies who snapped them up had known the enormity of their own presumption? I believe they all thought they were going to refine, to educate, to make real gentlemen out of their husbands. And what do you intend to make of me, I wonder?
Well, I've made a decent shopkeeper of you already, haven't I? But you needn't be afraid of my not appreciating you. I want a fancy sort of husband, not a common villager that any woman could pick up. I shall be proud of you. And now I've nailed you. I wonder at my own nerve.
So do I.
I'm not a bit like that, you know, really. Something above me and beyond me drove me on. That's why I know it will be all right. Don't be afraid. I can't make a fine speech about it like you, but it will be all right. I promise you that.
Very well. Go round to the rectory and put up the banns. And tell the rector's wife that we've got some prime artichokes this morning. She's very fond of artichokes.
You're sure you feel happy about it?
I don't know what I feel about it. Go and do as you're told. Don't ask ridiculous questions.
Number, please. Oh, an order. Thanks very much. Yes, we have some very fine artichokes just in this morning. Thanks very much. They shall be sent round directly. Oh, and there's something else. Are you there? Sorry to detain you. Could I speak to the rector? Yes, it's rather particular. It's about bands. 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 B for beauty, A for audacity, two N's for nonsense, and S for singing. Yes, bands, that's right. Well, the what? Oh, the parties. Of course, well...
That was A Village Wooing, a commediatina for two voices by Bernard Shaw, with Siobhan McKenna and Cyril Cusick. The narrator was Frank O'Dwyer. Production was by Seamus Branagh.